and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. In the last week, a bill to protect access to IVF failed on the Senate floor. Many families are scared that more restrictions on reproductive rights will impact their ability to have children. Mike Moen talks with one mom who says IVF was her lifeline.
For the second time this year, Senate Republicans blocked efforts to put in place a nationwide right to in vitro fertilization, or IVF. The outcome is likely to get more attention on the campaign trail this fall. Mariah Grand, a mother from Bloomington, says she and her husband were both diagnosed with infertility. They are now proud parents of a daughter through IVF, but there were many hoops to jump through.
Infertility is a disease, and like any other disease, it is emotionally and physically exhausting. When your disease is not covered by insurance, there's a financial component added on top of it, which is equally exhausting.
She says the couple underwent many tests, took out a second mortgage, and relied on crowdfunding to pay for the IVF. In Congress, Senate Republicans say they support IVF, but accuse Democrats of a political stunt by bringing it to a vote. Democrats contend the outcome aligns with conservative ideals in curtailing reproductive freedoms. Grant says people have their right to their opinions about an issue, but those beliefs shouldn't come at the expense of access to reproductive care.
It's isolating. Our society has created a taboo around it for so long.
Although the U.S. Senate vote failed, Grant says it's encouraging to see policymakers debate this topic openly. Minnesota Governor and Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Tim Walz has frequently called for expanded access to IVF, citing his family's struggle with infertility. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This week to Seth Faces the Music, where I'll be playing songs about lies, and that's the truth. Check it out every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any leftover rain will be moving on out as skies turn mostly sunny. Not a bad Sunday and first day of fall with highs in the upper 60s, gusty north winds over 20. For tonight, mostly clear skies. Lows will drop to the lower 40s. It's 66 at our studios.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wisconsin, you're listening to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, sitting alongside me in the passenger seat, riding
yes.
shotgun, like a lamprey eel stuck to the side of the shark. No, come on, you're not like that. Danielle Fairman. Danielle
Fairman. Are you calling yourself a shark?
Well, I guess in this case scenario, it'd be more like a whale, I guess. What are those things that get stuck to the side of fish and they have what's called a symbiotic relationship? Jeff, do you know what those things are called?
Remora.
Remora!
How do you know this?
Ding, 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 ding.
That answer was remarkable.
Oh, wow.
Remarkable.
Like that was the earliest.
Start the tally.
That was the earliest we've ever done that.
That's a dad joke right off the bat. Raised in Wisco is your show that teaches you and shows you how to
dad
love
jokes.
The outdoors of Wisconsin, how to have fun in the outdoors of Wisconsin. And I tell everybody at the end of the day, it's a cooking show. How to take that field or forage from field
Woo.
Or lake or stream or river to the table. Today, we have an awesome guest, and I'm going right off the top of them. Jeff Pritzels,
Heck
the
yes.
Deer Program Specialist for the Department of Natural Resources. Look.
What?
I've been a hunter. I'm a hunter. Danielle,
yes.
I think you, and I can't forget, Allie Mae Smoller is in the studio with us today, too.
Hello.
What up, G? She's here. Because, and if you detect that there is a certain air of excitement and bombacity going on here. It is because there is, because we just got out of the turkey blind and had one heck of a fall turkey hunt. We called. We had decoys out. They came to the decoys. We had a near miss. We're going to talk about that as well.
Yeah.
A miss. But we ended up the day with four turkeys.
Yes, we did.
And I am so excited because four there is nothing better than turkey, fresh turkey from field to table.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to eat that for dinner tonight. But Jeff Pritzel is here, the deer program specialist for the Department of Natural Resources. And I want to say, I know if you're a hunter or a fisherman out there, I know there are those of you, those of us, who say, I'm trying to couch my words because I can't swear here.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, swear word DNR.
Ah.
And what I am telling you, and Jeff is an example of this, the former chief warden Todd Schaller is an example of this. Our friend Taylor Finger is a great example of this. There are some amazing people in Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources who not only walk the walk, but they are in the field hunting, fishing, and foraging. I had the chance last week to cook for some state DNR wardens, some federal wardens, and some folks who work for the DNR. And what I like to see is a DNR that works with hunters, with anglers, with those using Wisconsin's great outdoors. And Jeff Pritzel, I'm so excited because the deer program specialist has to do with like the social aspects of hunting, the cultural aspects of hunting, hunters getting along with non-hunters, land that's private versus land that's public. And I love this because we don't get insights like this into those who work in the DNR. And I think some of the biggest reasons there are apprehensions between people who use the outdoors and people who enforce the laws and people who carry out the administrative aspects is that there's not an understanding of exactly what they're doing.
I like how you said it was a social aspect that has an eye on, because before the show, we were talking about how social media and the social controversy of it, of velvet bucks.
Ah, velvet bucks. We can talk about velvet bucks today.
I really want to talk
coming up more and more
because he said that's it's more of a social aspect. What were you saying? It's something about bringing it into like the tags for a velvet buck or just get velvet buck week, like we have the holiday hunt.
Sure. So kind of where you were going, Joel, was, I mean, my whole career, 30 plus years now, I've heard people throwing out examples of, well, why don't we do it this way? Why don't we do it this way? And why does the department want to do it this way? And I like bringing around the understanding that the department brings the information to the table so that people can make informed decisions. But in the end, what we're working with are results of directives that either come through state statute or administrative code through the people's will and their processes. And I would say the department, we don't really care necessarily. Not that we don't care, but it's not up to us when and where and how we harvest our wild game.
Mm-hmm.
We provide the information of, here's the pros and cons of doing it this way versus this way. But in the end, you know, the public, you know, will shape how we go about doing that. So this example of, and I've just started to hear this in the last year or two, people asking me, when is Wisconsin going to talk about opening the season earlier? Because they're hearing about, I guess, I don't want to call it a fad, but the real recent interest and growth as a new experience is to harvest a buck in velvet. And so some of the states, other states have started to, you know, respond to that. Heck, some of the states south of us open their archery season earlier than we do.
Yeah, you're saying about August.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were thinking about here was opening weekend of bow season. It's too warm to go deer hunting, right?
Yep.
Well, think of the deer
you
hunters.
You can hunt in Florida in December and it's 85 degrees.
That's what I brought up.
It's never too warm to hunt.
They're archery hunting right
now. It's just miserable when you hunt.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, what is your intake, Jeff? Are you pro or against?
I honestly am neutral on that.
Yeah.
You know, again, personally, I think it's good for me as the deer program specialist to keep a relatively objective view of this. To be quite honest,
of course,
deer hunting is not my biggest passion. I'm more of a bird hunter.
I've been
working with deer hunters my entire career, but I can look at this objectively because I don't feel like I have a personal stake in the outcome so much. So I'm open to listening to whatever options and what people are looking for. Put the information on the table and say, you know, make a decision through public engagement process.
See, my input is that how you can do, you put in for a tag for elk and you get drawn. Why don't you just do that to see how the what the population would think about getting velvet into the process?
Well, I can tell, I'm no mind reader, but I've been at the game, you know, having been in the legislature and now being an avid hunter, I can tell you already, I can see the fights over it. And let me tell you what I see the
There's
fights
always a
are.
Fight.
But velvet bucks, when you say, hey, should we have a season on a velvet antlered buck, what you're doing, and I'm not talking about those that are those deer that are anomalies that end up with their velvet later or have got, you know, a chromosomal difference or something that affects them and has them have velvet later. I'm talking about hunting bucks during the velvet season. Let me tell you the biggest issue. You're going to have ethical fights over it because a buck in velvet has not stopped growing its antlers. Velvet means the antlers are growing. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a contingent of people who are going to say, don't you dare. Damn you if you hunt a buck in velvet because it's not as big as its potential to be to become. And you're going to have that fight between those folks and the folks who say, I want to hunt a beautiful velvet buck, and I think there should be an opportunity to do that.
Well, those are the people that are going to fight saying, you should let that one grow another year. You should not shoot that one. You should shoot this one. Save it for 2 or 3 years. See how it looks in 2 or 3 years.
I feel sure.
Those are the same people that are going to fight for that.
I've said this forever. The biggest problem with the sportsman community, men and women in the sportsman community, is that they're their own worst enemy.
This is true.
We want to advance the cause of being allowed to use our Second Amendment privileges, being the best conservators of the environment, making sure that we have the right numbers in cooperation and conjunction with the DNR. So there are people who vilify what the DNR is doing. And folks like Jeff Pritzel, the fact that he's coming on this show should show you they actually want to work with the sportsmen and women of this state. Mm-hmm. And that this show is going to be so good and so fascinating because I'm going to pick his brain about the social aspects of hunting, what it means to have those fights, how the department juggles those things, and frankly, some of the criticism that's sometimes warranted but often not warranted. But before we get too far into that, which we are going to get into, and folks, you're not going to believe it. Ellie Mae Smaller, Danielle Fairman, and Joel Clayfish, that's me, just got out of the turkey blind.
Yes, we did.
And
like, I still have dirt on my pants.
Had one heck. Well, yeah, if you come out of the woods with a little dirt and a little blood on your clothing, you've usually had a good day. So, and we were prepping the woods for producer Jess, who's going to get out there one of these days with us to hunt a turkey. But I'm going to take my weekly Wisco was just 30 minutes ago coming out of the woods with four fresh Wisconsin fall turkeys, which was an absolute blast. The turkeys came to the decoys. We had the three of us packed like sardines into a little blind, and we had
an 80-degree day.
It was as hot as a
shooting
sardine can, too.
It was hot.
In the microwave.
It was like 86 degrees, and plus in the stuffiness of a blind. But I have to say, Ellie Mae, you brought along charcuterie.
Yes.
You
individual
did.
charcuterie
packets. Boxes. Yeah.
And she brought a fourth one for you, Jess, because she thought you were coming out with us.
I did. Yes. I was really sad when I got there and you weren't there.
It was fantastic. So we all are very safety conscious. So we all had our shooting zones. Mm-hmm. And I was okay had I not shot at all. I wanted Ellie and Danielle to get the first shot. So they were separated in the front of the blind. And then I was going to shoot safely. So Danielle was on one side, Ellie was on the other, and I was going to follow up with a shot because I was against the back out the right-hand side. So we have these turkeys kind of on the march toward us. We had a decoys out. We had a Jake and an upright dominant hen and a feeder hen. And all of a sudden, the dominant hen of the group of turkeys coming started marching toward our dominant decoy.
Oh, yes,
she was ready for business.
She was ready to fight. But then three of the biggest turkeys out there. One included a huge bearded hen.
Oh, that would have been amazing if we would have got
I don't want to think about it.
Oh, and we're going to think about it, Ellie. We're going to think about it.
I'm
going to
dream about her tonight.
So they were flanking us around the back, and that's when your heart's beating, you know, and you're kind of waiting. And so we had to make sure we had safe shooting. And so we waited, and we were going to count to three and shoot if we had an opportunity to do that. Well, one of them, one of the dominant hen broke off and went straight to the decoys. Danielle had a great safe shot on that. Then we were waiting for the bearded hen to move to a safe position that Ellie could safely shoot it. And then I would cut her flank to the right of her against the back of the blind. Well, the big one's there in front of Danielle. Danielle gets ready, and here comes the bearded hen right in front. And I say, is everybody ready? They say, yes. And you're not going to believe what happened after that.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers. And the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to the smooth stylings of Maynard Ferguson on this week's Raised in Wisco, your station for smooth jazz. Just
I feel
kidding.
Like I'm listening to
hey,
a
that
game
wasn't bad,
show.
Is it? That wasn't bad. That was like,
look
I could have crossed over right there. Multi genre Joel. You have to say the J with a soft J. Folks, you're listening to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, Danielle Fairman's. On the laugh box next to me, I just
yes,
press a button and she laughs.
How do we go from Hanson to this? What is happening? But,
well, you see, Maynard I just type Ferguson. In a different name on Spotify. So,
oh, this is the greatest thing
we
ever.
We cannot blame producer Jess
no,
for the myriad of
we
music.
Chose
we
this.
Actually came up with a kaleidoscope of music today. And that is because we've got a kaleidoscope of topics. And what I'm so excited about is... We are revisiting the hunt that happened less than an hour ago, the turkey hunt, set up like this. Ellie Mae Smoller, Danielle Fairman, and I are in a blind, packed in like sardines. It's 86 degrees out, and the Spanish Armada of turkeys is coming our way. No joke, like 20 of them. Bearded hens, giant bearded hens.
Beautiful.
So they're coming in. And the main hen, the main boss hen, goes to our boss hen decoy. And Danielle's out one side.
She
We just got to make sure that Danielle's got a safe shot and then Ellie Mae. And we're waiting for the huge bearded hen to make its way into safe shooting territory for Ellie Mae. And then I'm going to play clean up all the way against the back of the blind out the right side. So once that boss hen goes to the boss hen decoy, I'm like, she's going to hang around for a while. She's mad that someone's invaded her territory. And I'm like, okay, Danielle, you on it? And good thing Danielle's got some serious pipes on her arms because she was holding that gun up for a while. That thing must have got heavy.
Uh-huh.
So the weekly Wisco continuation takes us to where that bearded hen finally gets in the perfect lane, perfect, nothing behind it.
She just pulled right up.
I said, are you guys ready?
We were so
ready. They say, yes, on the three. One, two, three. Boom. And they both shoot. And Ellie was out trained on the bearded hen. What happened?
Oh, I missed the bearded hen. I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight. She was beautiful. And you know what? I don't even have a good excuse. I just straight up missed her. I shot right over her.
Yes, you did.
It just is what it is. Yep. It was very sad, though.
That is what the excitement of hunting is all about. If you lose that, take up knitting. I'm just saying.
Take up knitting.
Because that is what hunting is all about. And nobody,
I still had a great time.
Oh, it was fantastic. We ended up killing four turkeys. I played cleanup on the right. There were two big birds right outside the window. I put the new Benelli on them and pulled the trigger twice and killed two of them. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Dominant hen was just booty bumping the other dominant hen. And it's just, she was just clucking.
You are of a different generation than me. Do you know what that means, booty bumping?
I mean, it's right in the name there, Joel.
Okay.
Yeah, take that.
Do not assume that the obvious is obvious with me.
I mean, I guess
with
that's
these kids.
Fair.
Was it acting chuggy or what's some of the other words?
I looked on Google Maps. It was 65 yards. So the dominant hen was about 40 yards away. And then when the other ones were still coming around the corner.
Yeah.
And the other one that I shot was about 65 yards
away.
Yeah,
that's a good. You had a nice tight choke in. Mm-hmm. You took an ethical shot
nice
on it and flattened
choke.
That. That was beautiful.
Oh, yes.
And one of the most fun things about this is we've got Jeff Pritzel with us, who is the deer program specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Jeff, when you hear scenarios like this, your job literally is to understand the cultural implications of hunting. So I think that people who haven't hunted or haven't made a part of what they do in their free time don't necessarily understand how many split-second decisions are made during a hunt and why safety is taught at first and is so important. And, you know, why making sure what is in your background and the tab K and all that. So when you hear about our turkey hunt that just happened this afternoon, what goes through your mind as a program specialist for the DNR who analyzes, you know, kind of the social aspect of hunting?
Well, as you guys just described, there's this really cool blend of the social aspect and the biological aspect. And everyone thinks, you know, the department, well, we're biologists. We're just about the numbers, the productivity of the population and measuring and monitoring it. But where that interfaces then with the public interests and in terms of harvest, keeping harvest numbers within the sideboards of what keeps that population, you know, safe and stable. Those individual intimate things that are playing out on these one-on-one experiences, you know, that's cool. That's really where it's at. At the level the department works at, and this is one of the things we run into, probably the most misunderstanding or the conflict in terms of bridging that gap of the individual hunter's experience and the department's responsibility to manage that resource at the scale of the state or a county or a unit.
Yeah.
Those are
tough decisions.
We're operating at a scale of a huge landscape with thousands of individual animals, and then putting into perspective, what's the success rate of fall turkey hunters? You guys just had great success today, but collectively across the state, the success rate on fall turkey permits is really low.
What is it? Do you know the percentage?
It's less than 20%.
20%? Wow. Yeah.
So
only 20% of people who buy a fall turkey tag end up. But I think, now tell me, this is in your alleyway. Yeah. I think very few people actually target turkeys in the fall. Is that true?
That's a big part of it. So exactly. A lot of people will get a fall turkey tag as a, as long as I'm out there, if the opportunity presents itself, I want to be ready, but I'm not going to actually go out specifically for turkey. So a fair number of those permits are kind of in that category of, I'll just get one to cover my bases, and they may never actually end up pursuing it. So that, when it comes
to... That's got to be so hard to factor into the numbers.
Yeah, how do
you
do that?
And to factor into making sure you're a preservation of species when you know a hunter is buying a tag that's not necessarily trying to hunt the tag that they bought.
Well, we have our database, and especially since we went to the Go Wild system,
yeah,
we've got the electronic data to mine to say, all right, we can put this many permits out there without threatening the resource.
That's
at
great.
The zone level, mm-hmm. because we know that success rate's real low. And in my world now with deer, we really deal with that a lot.
That's for spring turkey harvest, I just looked it up on the Go Wild, 50,435 were harvested for spring turkey
incredible.
In 2024.
We had an awesome spring this year.
Yeah, heck yeah, we did.
Zone one was crushing it with 13,000.
That's insane. So, Ellie, and I just before we go to break, I want to make sure that we talk about Ellie. You had an awesome experience today and you missed.
Yes.
And I know some people, when they miss, they'll beat themselves up for a week. It'll ruin them to hunting for a while. And I want everybody out there to understand everybody misses. And it's just part of hunting. And hunting experience is what makes it great. And if it was grocery shopping, you'd go and you'd put your money down and you'd leave with the butterball. But when you're going out there to do it yourself, understand the satisfaction of cooking that turkey is 1,000-fold because of that. And I can't wait. Jeff Pritzel, the deer program specialist for the Department of Natural Resources, come back. He just got back from an Alaska caribou hunt. We got to hear about my dream hunt. Danielle Fairman's going to give her weekly Wisco a little late, but not a dollar short. And we got our recipe of the week. I'll tell you about it.
Does someone say turkey?
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news talk and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
CBS News brief, 4 people are dead, 17 injured after multiple shooters opened fire in a busy area of Birmingham, Alabama. As detectives gather evidence, Police Chief Scott Thurman has an update.
Approximately over 100 shell casings were collected, along with numerous other pieces of evidence.
A new CBS poll says either former President Trump or Vice President Harris could win. Here's CBS's Jennifer DePinto with more.
Kamala Harris has the slightest 2-point edge over Donald Trump across the collective battleground states. It was 50-50 in the battlegrounds last month.
Just as the State Department instructs Americans to leave, tensions remain high on the Israel-Lebanon border. Hezbollah has fired dozens of rockets into Israel. Here's BBC's Daniel Desimone.
Some of the missiles that came in overnight from Hezbollah has been described by the Israeli military as going further and deeper than seen before during this almost year-long conflict with Hezbollah.
CBS News Brief, I'm Cooper Lawrence.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Malik Willis will face his former team today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Green Bay is at Tennessee for a noon showdown today. In the preseason, the Packers traded with the Titans to bring in quarterback Malik Willis, who started last week's win over Indianapolis. He's expected to start again today as Jordan Love continues to recover from an MCL sprain that he suffered in the season opener. Sean Clifford was also signed to the active roster from the practice squad for today's game, which kicks off at noon. The NL Central champion Milwaukee Brewers lost their third game in a row, blanked 5-0 by the Arizona Diamondbacks on Saturday. The loss all but puts the Brewers out of the running for a playoff bye. Milwaukee only managed 2 hits in the loss. It's Milwaukee and Arizona again Sunday to wrap up a 7-game homestand. And the kickoff time for Saturday's Wisconsin Badgers football game at USC has been announced. The game will start at 2:30 p.m. Both teams are 2-1 to start the year. You'll be able to hear it on select Civic Media stations around the network. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Civic Media Sports.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows around 41, sunshine 69 for Monday. Monday night, some fog, partly cloudy, lows around 42. Mostly sunny Tuesday, 70 the high, 74 with sunshine for Wednesday, sunny and 77 Thursday.
Currently 66 degrees.
It's time to go for the green or gold with Civic Media's new Text to Win contest. When you go for the green or gold, you could win $100 cash, gold jewelry, and be entered to win our grand prize, 2 indoor club-level seats to see the green and gold in Green Bay. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store and get ready to text in for your chance to win in this statewide contest. Get ready to go for the green or gold with your local Civic Media radio station.
I don't know about other states, but in Wisconsin, we help our neighbors and love our communities. But California mega millionaire Eric Hovde doesn't seem to get that. Maybe that's why he questioned whether children should be able to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And whether people in nursing homes should be able to vote. Hovde called for raising the retirement age for hardworking Wisconsinites and making obese people pay more for health care. And a Hovde company even spent decades trying to demolish the building housing Madison's oldest family-owned bar. Something they finally did this year, shuttering a treasured neighborhood institution for good. That is not how we do things in Wisconsin. And that is why we can't let California mega millionaire Eric Hovde represent us. Paid for by a Better Wisconsin Together Action. ABWT-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Join our advertising family on WFHR WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on WFHR.com. Your news, just for Wisconsin Rapids and surrounding communities. I'm Melissa Kay with WFHR News.
Locally grown radio, your home for news talk and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Everything in the great outdoors of Wisconsin. I'm Joel Clayfish. Alongside me is Danielle Fairman.
Hello.
You're listening to Raised in Wisco on all your Civic Media stations throughout Wisconsin, 13 of them. On Saturdays at 11 a.m., we've had the hunting season open for exactly 1 week. And tonight, today,
is the night
today,
when to we become one.
Started no? our. I started my game season. I've killed some geese. Danielle's on a tangent. What's new? What were you? What song was that?
Spice Girls.
Spice Girls. We went from Dua Lipa to Spice Girls.
We're all over the place. This is great.
That's pretty skibbity, as the kids say.
Oh, no.
No, don't. I tried it with my kid. My kid, when I say that, nothing makes me more cringe. Hey, there's another one. Nothing makes me more cringy to them when I try to use Gen Z sayings.
Yeah, I bet.
Producer Jess is actually laughing.
She's laughing.
I just want you to know I'm always going for the laugh. And if I get a laugh out of her, I'm pretty happy about it.
It's cringy for us, too.
Now, nice. Wait a minute. You're on the precipice of being in my generation. You can't. It can't be that cringy to you, Ellie.
It is. It hurts my ears. It hurts my bad ear.
I think maybe the sound of you missing that turkey today.
Oh, hits your ear. Hey, I gotta go.
Wait, give me my charcuterie board first.
Jeff Pritzel is here. He's the Deer Program Specialist for the Department of Natural Resources, and he is a fascinating job because his job is to talk about the programming of hunting, literally the programming of hunting, the social aspects, the cultural aspects, the conservation aspects of it. And one thing that he has done, which, you know, arguably we haven't seen in the past, is you've taken that position, which very much could be a desk job, looking at numbers, looking at statistics. You made it a job of going to the people who participate in Wisconsin's outdoors to make your job better in the relationship with the DNR, better with those who use the waters and woods of the state. That, to me, is heroic. That, to me, is the reason that government exists in the way it does, to listen to the people and to be a part of a solution rather than at odds or something that, that the general public doesn't know about.
Well, thanks, Joel. And I thought after 30 years of being in the game, you know, working in the field and then working as an administrator, I developed relationships over those 30 years. I've worked very closely with the Wisconsin Conservation Congress members. That's a really unique organization. And going back to the earlier conversation about, we were talking about velvet bucks and maybe a change, working through the Conservation Congress is how those kind of changes happen. And having worked with those folks for 30 years, I thought I could move into this deer position, keep those relationships going to have those challenging, difficult conversations that are inevitably going to come up when, because the issue with, we were talking about it earlier with deer hunters, what I've come to learn over 30 years is there's no such thing as an average deer hunter or a stereotypical deer hunter.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, so I mean, it's fascinating to me, and I guess one of the biggest questions I have for you is, do you have to struggle to get past the animosities that see any government entity as an enemy? Is that something you end up dealing with, or are you finding, because what I'm finding is, and I want to be clear, Jeff Pritzel is an actual hunter. He's out there waterfowl hunting like crazy. Just got back from Alaska where he was caribou hunting, which is one of my dreams, to go to Alaska and caribou hunt. After hearing about how hard it is, I don't know if I'd make it alive, though. And so oftentimes, there are those in the administrations who are not actual hunters. And what I've seen that I really am impressed with the current administration is they're offering now examples of how to cook wild game and wild foraged items and examples of learn to hunt for members of the Department of Natural Resources who may have never hunted. How important is it for those who are working in jobs like yours to have an understanding and actually get out there and in the field and do it? And I'm just thrilled to see that changing. But how important is it to have that understanding? Because you said no deer hunter's the same, and I agree with you. And when you are in the waters and woods participating in outdoor activity, you have your own way of looking at it, and the administration's job is to fill the statute, to fulfill the statute, and to fulfill the federal regulations. How on earth do you blend that together and come out with a final product?
Well, to me, one of the, I think the most valuable things I do, I'm going to a meeting, and we've got content, we've got a topic, we've got agendas. The work that we do before the meeting starts and after the meeting is over, one-on-one, chatting in the parking lot and getting, allowing people to know who you are as a person and establish that common ground, and then you get a ripple effect from that. Because those are, even if it's a handful of individuals, then they go and talk to their friends and say, hey, I chatted with the guy from the DNR in the parking lot for 10 minutes, and it wasn't such a bad guy after all.
Right? Oh, yeah. I always have great experiences with people from the DNR, sheriffs, anybody. I always have a great experience. But I want to flip the switch a little bit. When you were talking about how you're a huge waterfall person as well. And when I was talking to you early before the show, you were talking about the waterfall and wetlands restoration in the 1900s. And then tag in the cormorants.
Oh,
Why did you bring up the cormorants? Can you talk a little bit more about?
So, sure. First,
this is a fascinating topic because for those of you who don't know or who may be new to Raised in Wisco, a cormorant is a bird that eats its weight a million times over in fish and can decimate a fishery, but you cannot hunt them. So now they're not a duck. Mm-hmm. Are they waterfowl? Well, don't even know the answer.
It's a duck, not a bird.
We can get into that. But so in general, again, I came into this career as a wetland waterfowl specialist, driven by my interest in waterfowl hunting. And so I did a lot of that for the first 10 years of my career. Then working in the Green Bay area, and I was more on the bird side, and not just game birds, not just ducks and turkeys, that type of thing. I did my master's research on Forster's tern, which is an aquatic bird that's an endangered species. And so I was very interested in non-game birds, colonial water birds. Cormorants are colonial water birds. They have experienced a really interesting history over the past 30 years across the continent. And there's ecological reasons why we've got way more cormorants.
Why can't we kill them?
Well, okay, let's talk hunting and what what the requirements are for there to be a legitimate game bird. One, they have to be productive enough to be able to sustain a harvest, right?
Right.
Two, there has to be some element of challenge and fair chase, and that there could be that. But the third element is they should be pretty good table fare, and the whole purpose of it, there's where your problem is.
What about mergansers, though?
Yeah.
Merganser.
Yeah. I feel like mergansers are not pretty good table fare.
So imagine mergansers and crank the dial a little further over, in terms of because of their diet. Most people would not consider that to be, good table fare.
Cormorants are nasty tasting. That's what you're trying to say.
There's several members of the waterfowl family, some sea ducks and stuff that we pursue that aren't the greatest table fare, but mm-hmm. we work through that. But so, yeah, bottom line, by definition, that they don't fit into that. And so we want to maintain that we don't hunt a species simply because we consider it vermin and want to persecute it and reduce its numbers. But what ended up happening was, there was this parallel experience where at the time cormorant numbers were really increasing, and across the Great Lakes, perch numbers went down.
Oh, of course.
And so there was this very strong desire to make that connection and say one equals the other. Mm-hmm. And there was some relationship there. Ultimately, for a number of reasons, because not only were cormorants foraging on fish, in the end, diet studies would show a lot of it is rough fish, and they're very opportunistic. You have a great perch hatch, they're going to eat perch. If you have a down perch year, they're going to eat goby. They're going to switch to whatever, which makes them...
They're malleable is what you're saying.
Yeah, they're adaptable, and that's why they've recovered in the landscape. But they also really can change the vegetation on the islands that they colonized. Mm. So some people looked at the vegetative communities on the islands. And when they migrate south, they were generating a lot of conflict with fish farmers in the Mississippi Delta. So federally, that's where it came to the point where, all right, we're going to do some cormorant management. But I got involved with that dynamic and was fascinated by helping people understand that those connections and that and brought it to a resolution to a certain degree where we got it to where you don't hear people talking about it as much as we used to.
Yeah, I thought cormorants, not cormorants. I thought cormorants were just a crap fish, or not fish, crap bird that you just didn't want to do anything with or about or anything like that. So hearing how they actually have somewhat of a purpose, kind of.
It's a, you know, one of those, you know, beauties in the eye of the beholder. I am, as a bird watcher, I could be fascinated by the thousands of, and I had someone talk about, you know, they saw thousands of cormorants, you know, migrating together along the coast of the lake. And from a picturesque standpoint, as beautiful as a big flock of geese or something like that.
Sure.
But
They drive me nuts lenses. Because you see them in the distance and you're like, guys, get ready, get ready.
Uh-huh. Here comes
cormorants. Which leads me to ask you, I have to ask you about this because I know you're penchant for waterfowl hunting and now you are the deer program specialist, so you deal with these issues. I think the single largest animal we have that has a social fight on its hands is the sandhill crane. We, as the original author of the sandhill crane hunting bill some 10 years ago, I got absolutely crucified for proposing it. Now their numbers are increasing so much that they're doing serious real damage to agriculture in Wisconsin. There is a movement right now underway to understand the sandhill crane's impact on the economy and the ecology of the state. There's a sandhill crane study committee. What are your gut instincts as to whether we're going to get past the social mores of hunting cranes in Wisconsin with the International Crane Foundation here and the potential reality that education will bring it to a point that people will understand a harvest is not only a sustainable option, but something that should be exercised, you know, essentially not only because they're great table fare, but for the greater good of the ecology of the state?
You know, I think as we've, you know, let's dial back over 20 years ago now, we were in the same position with mourning doves, right?
Right. Right. That's so a you great, can, you, oh, you, were
can
we?
Look,
a great,
you can look back.
I did
yes.
not know this.
Yeah, I was a folks. Television news reporter. It was before I ran for office, and Dwayne Johnsrud proposed a mourning dove hunt, and it was one of the biggest controversies this state had seen.
So in these situations, you know, navigating the situations, you have to have a combination of things to happen where the planets have to align, the right situation has to fall into place where you've got your Dwayne Johnsruds, you know, in the right positions to effectively, you know, promote and set things up like that. And now when you look back at what seemed like a really big deal over two decades ago with bringing a dove hunt to the state, now it'd be like, didn't really seem like a big, doesn't seem like such a big deal anymore. So 20 years from now, we'll be in that position with sandhills. I hesitate to even say I think it's going to go one way or the other because the timing has to line up. Where there's, yes. I think people are going about
so
it right.
Many factors.
I think they're going about it right in this time. I think putting too much weight on, again, trying to look at it as a need to do it specifically to address the damage angle probably unto itself isn't the winning
right.
strategy.
I don't think it is.
So
I think you
learn
got that
from
on
that and it'd be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to me. And I think, you know, look, if we can, is it going to affect really my overall ability to hunt and forage and put food on the table because my family only eats wild game? No, it's not. Is it something I'd like to see happen? Yes, it is. But I think that one of the more important aspects of it is that we have an understanding as to the reasons to move forward with it. And I think education on the forefront is the key. And that's kind of what we're seeing, you know, as it goes on. I mean, Danielle, you've never known a time where mourning dove hunting wasn't available to Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was absolutely fascinating to hear about the doves.
Yeah, they are absolutely, they're a fantastic table fare, tasty morsel, if you will. I'll tell you that. And, oh my gosh, this show flies so fast. I cannot wait because we are going to tell you one quick thing to do. I'm going to try to encourage you to get a turkey tag if you haven't gotten it yet because there's still a few available and make turkey hunting part of your experience, even if it's your first experience. But I got a tasty dish.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Stream the best of British TV on BritBox. Watch captivating dramas and gripping mysteries. Whether it's entire series of massive hits like Sherlock and Vera, new seasons of originals like The Responder, starring international Emmy winner Martin Freeman, or an extraordinary selection of beloved treasures featuring Idris Elba, Jodie Comer, Matthew McFadyen, Benedict Cumberbatch, and more. Only on BritBox. Watch with a free trial at BritBox.com.
Join James and Southwood County Humane Society for Pet of the Week on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Stay up to date on needs, events, and available pets. Over 100 pets have been adopted thanks to area sponsors. To learn how to help, call Ashley at 715-496-0710.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
If you don't get fired up with a little David Lee Roth and the old original Van Halen, come on, something's wrong. Just like you should get fired up if you're listening to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Alongside me in the sidekick seat, riding shotgun, playing the banjo to my ukulele.
Exactly what's happening.
Daniel Fairman, number 32, wearing the jersey of the opposing team. Well, no, the same team. Same team.
I feel like we're on the same team.
We're on the same team.
And 35. We're number eight.
We had such an awesome hunt today. Jeff Pritzel is here. He's the deer program specialist with an extensive background in waterfowl hunting. And what an awesome discussion we're having about the social aspects of hunting, sandhill cranes, the cormorants, deer hunting. You know, and we're going to do, we got our recipe of the week coming up. Ellie Mae Smoller's here. She had, we had an awesome time. Look, I know you shot and missed at the bearded turkey.
We're bringing that
today.
Up again. Pouring salt in the wound at this point.
I'm not. No, I was about to give you a compliment. I was about to say, having you along in the blind is an absolute right. There were so many times I had to say to myself and to them, whisper, don't talk, because we would get to talking and laughing so loud. The turkey, I think, and then my alarm went off that said, get
yes,
to the radio station in
alarm.
The blind. My alarm went off.
And Danielle, could you imagine if our alarms went off?
I can't imagine.
It was my fault. I'm taking responsibility and I will try to become a better person.
It didn't ruin the hunt
Does
at all.
Work?
The turkeys were like, hey,
no,
yeah, it's our
the
time.
The turkeys all froze. Did you notice that? They all froze. I think I had like Chase Rice ready set, let's roll playing or something. And they all stopped and thought, whoa, there's a country singer around. Finally, it didn't end up killing our hunt though, but it was, I don't know where it comes from. Don't ask. I don't know. Producer Jess is going to get ready for, she couldn't join us today because she was actually at work. But she's going to join us in the field for a turkey hunt. And Jeff Pritzel, we're going to talk about our recipe of the week, but I really want to talk to you about the social aspects of deer hunting in the state, because we are now in the archery deer season. But I'm going to tell you something, for anybody who cooks wild game and says, oh, it doesn't taste good, this show is about helping you make it taste good and helping folks try it and enjoy it. And I'm going to talk about one of my recipes. You guys, if you want to think about one of your recipes, my recipe is for turkey that is super, super simple to do. And that is because when you kill wild game, it is such a lean protein, you want to add a fat to it. So if you want to eat that turkey fresh from field to table, this is a perfect way to do it. You slice that turkey breast up into strips about an inch or smaller each, and take a fork or one of those mechanisms that tenderizes it and pokes the needles through it, and poke the ever-loving heck out of each one of those strips, and then douse them in teriyaki sauce with oil, olive oil, vegetable oil, canola oil, and that oil in the marinade is going to get into all of those holes you poked in it. Then you wrap those in bacon, and while they're on the grill or the skillet, you baste them with a barbecue sauce, and that's going to coat and keep all of those juices in there. And the fat you add to it is going to add to the tenderness of it, and it's going to give it that store-purchased meat squeak. Does that make sense? When you bite into something and it's kind of got that pulled pork kind of...
It's got the bite to it.
It's got a bite to it. And it's not going to be dry and shreddy. It's going to be, it's going to have kind of a juicy-ish texture to it. So that's my recipe of the week, the marinated teriyaki. And you can use that with goose, duck, wild turkey, venison, you name it. You can even do it with raccoon if you like. You guys have a recipe of the week, or did you like that one pretty
good? I like that one. I want to know what your question was for Mr. Jeff Pritzel over here.
About the deer hunting season?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Jeff, let's... Ellie, are you... You're a big cook. I don't want to skip you with a recipe idea.
I mean, I can tell you what I'm going to make tomorrow.
What are you going to make?
You were talking about juicy, and I have venison defrosted in the freezer right now. I'm going to make my Juicy Lucy burgers, venison burgers, with some... I think I'm going to do some Door County cherry chutney over them tomorrow.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
So good.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Super easy.
Hey, Ellie, you can come back tomorrow with those.
Yeah, come right on.
We can do that. Yeah.
See why Raised in Wisco is so fun, producer Jess?
Well, I mean, Ellie brings me baked goods.
And I also brought apparently pot pie last week.
Yeah, and it was delicious.
And
I will
bring
more.
Pot
pie.
I promise. I promise. Jeff Pritzel, I know you probably like to eat wild game as well. And I want to, I'd love to hear your wild game suggestion. But beyond that, I want to know, what are some of the biggest disagreements and fights you see over the deer hunting season?
Ooh, that's a fun question.
Well, I think, all right, go down that path.
We're there.
Let's do it,
well,
baby.
A perennial one has certainly been just the timing of the gun deer season. And we've got this sense of tradition and that the gun season should always be 9 days and it should be the Saturday before Thanksgiving, you know, through the Sunday after. And I would say the majority of people still are in that camp, but there's a growing group of people that are saying, well, if we want to keep, because we're seeing this shift of hunter effort away from the gun season into archery hunting. People are wanting to hunt.
Right.
That's an expression of enthusiasm for deer
Absolutely.
Hunting.
Absolutely.
We want to hunt deer
and
more.
The rut happens during the archery season.
And so some people fret about and you're concerned about losing that tradition and the strength of the gun season, but it's really an augmentation of deer hunting that's just spreading out over more of the calendar year. But there's this perennial debate about how much of the effort should be, you know, in the archery and crossbow season versus the gun season. And some saying, well, the gun season, is it timed in the right part of November as it relates to the maximum opportunity to see deer? Because our hunting strategies have shifted and changed so much to where even the gun hunters have adapted more of an archery strategy where it's sit, wait, let have the deer come to you.
Waiting for more mature bucks as well.
And what if the deer aren't moving naturally, deer sightings are not going to be what we used to see during the gun season. And so you either move the gun season to when the deer are moving or just enjoy it for what it is.
And be an ongoing fight. And that's something to think about. Listen, we're in the thick of the most exciting part of Wisconsin's year, and that is you can hunt deer, turkeys, waterfowl, black bear. Oh, man, it's so awesome, and we had such a great time today. Thank you so much for listening to Raised in Wisco.
Thank you.
Your source for getting out in the outdoors of Wisconsin. I'm Joel Clayfish. That's Danielle Fairman, Ellie Mae Smoller, and Jeff Pritzel joining us today. We'll see you next time on Raised in Wisco. We're Unchained. Awesome show.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts. Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Hi everyone, Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.